And so, stay tuned.
Hopi, Hopi people, don't you love this earth? We share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole.
Up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale, and this is Ecologic for November 22nd, 2016, here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Gift-giving season is upon us. Buying local does not mean going to the closest chain box store. Instead of buying from corporations, how about really going local? Churches and schools throughout the area have crafts fairs where you can buy directly from artists. Look for them. And by artists, I mean jewelry makers, knitters, graphic artists, potters, all types of crafts. Most of what they make is unique in some way. I'll be at a craft fair in Harlem on Saturday and Sunday, December 10 and 11, at the beautiful St. Mary's Episcopal Church, 521 West 126th Street, between Amsterdam Avenue and Old Broadway. So that's December 10, 11, St. Mary's, 126th Street between Amsterdam and Old Broadway. There will be a release party for the Climate Chaos issue of World War III Illustrated next Tuesday, November 29th at 7 p.m. at Max Fish, 120 Orchard Street, just north of Delancey Street on the Lower East Side. World War III Illustrated is always a fantastic magazine with cutting-edge sequential art and writing that communicates sometimes complex political and social issues in wonderful ways, often with a sense of humor. It is my favorite illustration of what comic books can do under the right guidance. Many of the artists will be there, and there is usually a slideshow of some of the work and a live band. When they say party, they mean it. So World War III Illustrated. Again, that's Tuesday, November 29th. That's in a week. 7 p.m., Max Fish, 120 Orchard Street, just north of Delancey. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is not a done deal, nor is it completely dead. Donald Trump's first meeting with a foreign leader after winning the presidential election was with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in a last-ditch effort to save the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They met at Trump Tower on Thursday, November 17th, but yesterday, Trump announced that he wants to withdraw the U.S. from the TPP. It's even mentioned on commercial news radio, when for years they've avoided mentioning the issue or even saying the words Trans-Pacific Partnership. President Obama announced not long after the election that he's no longer going to push for TPP vote during the lame duck session, but left it open for Congress to still do so. And other countries that want to take U.S. jobs and fill U.S. markets are pushing it. So contact your senators and congressional reps. The congressional switchboard is 202-224-3121. You can find out who represents you and leave a message. Ask them to vote against TPP if it comes up. Even if your representative has said they are not going to vote for TPP, ask them to go public with that. Trade agreements were a major issue for voters in the battleground states and contributed to the Democrats losing the presidential election. That might be why Obama said he would stop pushing for a lame duck vote on TPP. Too late for this past election, but hopefully the whole party took that as a wake-up call. Hopefully. TPP will override clean air laws, clean water laws, the Endangered Species Act, fracking bans, food labeling laws, food safety laws, indigenous rights, and labor rights. It will take away generic drugs, internet freedom, banking reforms, renewable energy goals, and hundreds of other hard-won freedoms and protections. And you know that the corporations are not going to give up on it. They'll bring it up in some other way. For links to a lot of TPP information and groups still fighting it, go to www.nycsec.org. NYCSEC.org. And speaking of the election, I would like to point out that the fossil fuel and nuclear industries run energy policy now, would have under Clinton, and will under Trump. Massive amounts of our tax money is given to polluting industries like mining, fossil fuel, and nuclear power now. And Obama advocates drilling for oil on the Atlantic coast, no matter what, shore and beach businesses would lose their livelihoods when the inevitable leak or spill happens. Inevitable leak or spill. But environmentalists stopped him from doing that. Trump also advocates such drilling, and we'll have to stop them too. President Carter put solar panels on the White House in the late 70s. Reagan took them down, and no president from either party ever put them back up. The brightest light that comes to my mind is that large national environmental groups that would not criticize any destructive environmental policy from a Democratic president will hopefully get going now. It looks like Trump's cabinet will look a lot like Reagan's, and the air, water, wildlife, and environmental justice are still deteriorating under policies they put in place then. And that's despite 16 years of Democratic presidents since then. Meanwhile, Obama has signed a law to protect Monsanto and their genetically modified organisms. A Democratic Party front group that is pushing Elizabeth Warren for president sends out a survey with a list of issues to prioritize and leaves out climate change, Wall Street reforms, and free trade agreements. It's like they're already planning to lose again. Governor Cuomo of New York still wants to give tax subsidies and electric bill increases to bail out nuclear reactors owned by out-of-state companies. For more info, go to www.stopthecuomotax.org. It's a strange deal. He will send our money out of state, and they get to keep a big cut and send a little back to protect nuclear power plant jobs and continue the daily radioactive emissions. It will cost less to cut out the middleman and give the money to the workers directly and stop mucking up the air and water and our health with unnecessary aging reactors. But giving tax money to New Yorkers is somehow socialism, and that's considered bad, while sending money out of state where only a portion goes to those workers is somehow just doing business. Yeah, right. www.stopthecuomotax.org. Stop the C-U-O-M-O tax.org. There will be a rally about that outside a Cuomo fundraiser Tuesday, December 6th, 5:30 to 7 o'clock p.m., Long Acre Theater, 220 West 48th Street. And hopefully we'll have someone who was there call into Ecologic that day. So Long Acre Theater, Tuesday, December 6th, in 2 weeks, 5:30 to 7 p.m., 220 West 48th. And two pieces of nuclear news from yesterday, one good, one bad. Good first. After a year in court, the New York Court of Appeals reversed the appellate division's ruling and found that the Indian Point nuclear reactors, just north of New York City, are indeed subject to review by New York State in order to be relicensed. It is not solely up to the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission, whose budget is partly determined by how many nuclear reactors it regulates, which is one reason it has become a rubber stamp machine for the nuclear industry. And by the way, this is usual business in Washington. For example, the agency that regulates pipelines, FERC, gets a bigger budget if it approves more pipelines. So it does. The owner of Indian Point wants you to be exempt from coastal zone review, as they have been for 40 years, but they are not exempt and may have to close down. Also yesterday, just before 4 p.m. our time, there was a magnitude 7.4 earthquake 57 miles east of the coast of the Fukushima prefecture in Japan that lasted over a minute. It's a long time for an earthquake. The epicenter was a little south of the famous March 11, 2011, 9.1 quake that caused a 30-foot tsunami, damaged nuclear reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi plant, and killed thousands of people. Yesterday's tsunami was much smaller, but there was an evacuation. The largest 2011 aftershock was 6.2, while yesterday's was 5.4. The crucial cooling system at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactors stopped operating yesterday for about 90 minutes. And this is from Rainforest Rescue. Wildlife is under threat in Europe, too. One-third of all their species are threatened or endangered. One out of every three. Hundreds of species are already extinct. Habitat destruction is generally the reason, and now the European Union wants to make it harder to protect crucial habitat and keep already protected areas safe. For more information, go to www.rainforest-rescue.org. Remember the dash between rainforest and rescue. And Rachel Carson warned us 54 years ago. Monsanto has been saying for years that their popular pesticide Roundup does not stay in the environment and poison our bodies. An independent FDA-registered laboratory food testing study shows otherwise. A report issued by Food Democracy Now! And the Detox Project is on the fooddemocracy.org website. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup and has been found in many foods, especially processed foods. Glyphosate was originally patented in 1964 to clean pipes. The report explains the terrible things glyphosate does to our bodies and points out that hundreds of millions of pounds of Roundup are used every year. The residue has been found in rainwater, breast milk, and tap water. And by the way, the food they found with the most glyphosate was Cheerios. I link to the article and also to the report on my Ecolinks page. There's a new coalition of climate groups to tell you about. Nasser Haghamed has an article on AlJazeera.com about the Global Muslim Climate Network and talks about converting from fossil fuel to solar energy throughout the Muslim world. I link to Mr. Haghamed's article from my Ecolinks page. And this is maybe the worst piece of news I have for you today, and I'm so glad I can follow with good news that is somewhat related. Police at Standing Rock, North Dakota, attacked many of the water protectors with several different types of weapons, and a 21-year-old woman named Sophia Wolanski was directly hit in the arm by a concussion grenade and may permanently lose that arm. At least 26 other people were injured so badly they were taken by ambulance to hospitals. The Morton County Sheriff's Department is claiming the police are not responsible for her injury. Then where the bleep did the concussion grenade come from? One side has weapons, the other side does not. The people with weapons are using them. A collection has been set up for medical expenses. www.gofundme.com/30AEZXS. The link is on my Ecolink page. I was talking to Donna Stein, a frequent guest here on Ecologic today. She knows Sophia, has worked with her. She is from New York City. She was giving water to the people out there when she got hit with a grenade. The Neighborhood Energy Network alerted me to an article on grist.org about the tremendous number of solar panels that were installed worldwide in 2015. half a million each day. That's new solar panels, not a total. Safe, renewable energy that takes away our supposed need for pipelines like what the police are defending in North Dakota. On the same page of grist.com is also an article on the residents of Pawnee, Oklahoma, suing 27 oil and gas companies for the damage from earthquakes their fracking operations have caused. The state of Oklahoma, which has seen the number of earthquakes each year go from only a few to thousands, has admitted that fracking is to blame, though it hasn't slowed down their permitting process at all. If the people of Pawnee win this lawsuit, maybe that will slow the fracking down. Also on that website is a short article on the water cannons police are using in Standing Rock, North Dakota, even as temperatures go below freezing. Hundreds of people have been injured. Read all three articles from the link on my EcoLinks page on grist.org. The next Ecologic in 2 weeks will be mostly listener phone calls. My guests will be you. Thoughts on the environment or on the election? Call in. Have a local issue you want more people to know about? Call in. Tuesday, December 6th, 8 p.m. If you want to read the full articles I just summarized, I link to all those articles on the EcoLinks page of the Ecologic website, www.ecoradio.org. And our Facebook page is WBAI Ecologic, no spaces or dashes, WBAI ECO Logic. And please click like. For more environmental news, go to theenvironmenttv.com. EcoAnchorNYC.com, BiologicalDiversity.org, or EcoWatch.com. All those websites have a ton of information. You can find episodes of Ecologic on many different sites, EcoAnchorNYC.com, the WBAI.org archives, TheEnvironmentTV.com, and my own permanent archives have many different shows for you to listen to or watch. There's a direct link to all those shows on the past guest page. www.ecoradio.org is the main Ecologic page and will get you to the past guest page, the EcoLinks page, and my own permanent archives, ecoradio.org. When your air or water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said. Oh, boy. That was a rougher news segment than usual. But I am here with Tom Weissmuller. This is one of my favorite shows of the year. So I'm really happy to have you back on the air, Tom. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Ken. It's one of my favorite shows, too. How you like that?
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, background-wise, I studied meteorology since I was a kid. been forecasting weather for years. Joined NASA during the moon landings. And have kept in touch with my former colleagues, which is really neat to have people walked on the moon visiting your house. It's just because my house is in a nice place. It's not because of me. But
probably both.
A little bit, maybe. But I was one of the only meteorologists in the NASA 49, the group of center directors, astronauts, engineers, scientists who were complaining about the way NASA was handling the climate issues. And like you say, enough said, we've said our piece, and I think there'll be some changes in the way NASA handles climate. NASA is great in supplying data. Data is what we need, hard, verified, validated data that gives you real answers and allows people access to this data that gives good information. That's what NASA's role should be, and I hope that'll happen. excuse me.
And I know you get some of your data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Of course, yeah. And I'm in.
And by the way, anybody can go to that website, NOAA.gov.
Yes.
And you can get up-to-date weather forecasts from there.
Yeah, there's another good site. It's called What's Up With That, WUWT. And they have some spectacular graphics, particularly on, they have a sea ice reference page, which I look at almost every day. And that's actually part of my forecast is based on the data that I get from those pages. And
repeat that website again?
It's What's Up With That. It's W-A-T-T, Anthony Watts runs it. It's actually the most viewed climate website in the world.
.com.
But if you just Google WUWT, bang, it pops up. Lots of good data on it. And a lot of guest articles and stuff like that, too. Like I say, part of this forecast...
You're giving your sources away, Tom.
Hey, that's okay.
Not everybody can put them together like you do.
The more people that get interested in the real information on weather and climate, the better off the world is going to be. So, and particularly like that fact that some of the people in the Muslim world want to set up solar installations.
They got the sun.
Yes, that's it. They have the sun. They can use it for desalinization. There's a great plant run by Gem Solar or Gemma Solar halfway between Seville and Granada. And it's a demonstration.
You're talking about Spain.
Yes, in Spain. And they have sun 330 days of the year, which is a lot of sunlight. And they basically take heliostats and focus them on this giant pylon filled with molten sulfur. And they melt enough sulfur to carry it over 2 days if there are clouds. Mm-hmm. They provide uninterrupted power. You know, most people say solar is no good because the sun sets and then it gets dark. But this is a little bit different because you actually store the energy in this molten sulfur, which is in excess of 1,000 degrees. And then that gets bled off, generates steam, which generates power. A very, very nice. If your website can handle it, I can send you some neat pictures I took because it was there a couple of years ago.
Well, for anywhere, I'll link to them.
Okay.
Or I'll put them up, whatever.
Yeah, it's a neat site. Now.
Yeah, I use my EcoLinks page a lot.
Okay. but the sea ice factors greatly in this year's winter forecast.
Doesn't it always?
Not quite. Last year, you asked me to tell you where I messed up last December.
Yes, last December. You were right for the whole winter except for 1 month of it.
Right, and it happened to be the first month of the winter or actually the last month of fall. And the reason I got it wrong, well, actually it was a delayed forecast. We were edging out of an El Nino situation. And your listeners who listen to this program every year know what an El Nino is. And for the new listeners, it happens to be when you have very few clouds over the equatorial Pacific. The equatorial Pacific heats up. The temperature contrast between the equatorial Pacific and the poles is great. And you have an undulation of the jet stream, meaning warm air rushes north and cold air rushes south. So you have a vertical from a global standpoint, north and south, waves in the jet stream. Now, as you transition into a La Nina, which is the opposite, you have clouds over the equatorial Pacific. They reflect sunlight coming in. The Pacific is cooler. You have less contrast between the Pacific and the poles. So you have a jet stream that kind of flattens out. But it's the transition where I messed up. And here's how I messed up. I remember saying almost certain that we were going to get snow by Christmas because the undulations that I picked up a month ago would have carried that cold air over New York. But in that transition zone, the speed, the west to east speed of these loops slows down. And it slowed down enough so that the warm spike stayed intact in December until Christmas. The day after Christmas, it actually snowed a little bit. So I was off a little bit. This year is very, very different. And it's great when the years are different because you like to have a unique forecast. I was fortunate enough to be in China for the last couple of weeks and actually experience some of what I'm going to tell you about. It turns out that every year, we have a maximum amount of open water in the Arctic Ocean around September. Now, maximum open water means minimum ice, minimum floating ice. And when you have open water, the polar easterlies, since the Earth, the atmosphere actually rotates, the Earth rotates under its atmosphere. Anywhere along the shores of the Arctic, the wind is always out of the east. And they're called the polar easterlies. And if you have open water, they will pick up moisture out of the ocean and dump it on the surrounding land as snow. If they put a lot of snow on the land, then you have an increase in what's called albedo or reflectivity. And when sunlight hits that snow, and it's still sunny in September and October in that part of the world, then the energy bounces right off the Earth at wavelengths that CO2 can't intercept, shortwave radiation. So the more snow you have in the ground, the actually colder it is. When it gets colder, the polar high strengthens, and the polar high is this big blob of air that kind of sits over the pole and heads south if it is cold enough. And this year...
So it expands, as it were.
Yes, exactly. It's actually larger in volume. Now, this year, we didn't have a record open Arctic. We had the second most open Arctic in September. Mm-hmm. And the record before was 2012. And that record happened because a storm actually entered the Arctic Ocean, broke up a lot of the ice. And when you increase the surface area of the ice, it melts quicker. So 2012, we had a record open Arctic. But this year, we had the second. And after mid-October, we've had record open water in the Arctic Ocean from October through today even. So when you have open water in the Arctic, again, late in the season, you get more and more snow. Now, it turns out I was giving a talk at the NYU campus in Shanghai on the 9th of November.
NYU has a campus in Shanghai?
Yes, yes. Now, NYU has decided a number of years ago, John Sexton, its president, decided they wanted to make NYU a global university. Now, we have campuses in Abu Dhabi, Shanghai, Florence. And if you attend school there, you will get an NYU degree. Now, the city of Shanghai had explosive growth, beautiful new buildings. It actually looks like Disney's Tomorrowland, if you ever saw that movie with George Clooney. It's absolutely stunning. And the city of Shanghai worked with NYU to give them a building at low rent, so that NYU would bring some professors there. At one point I was president of the Alumni Association of NYU, so I'm closely connected to the university. I'm a big fan of what they're doing. They're populating the world with intelligence, which is really, really neat, and we need it in this world, believe me. I was giving a climate lecture at NYU Shanghai after the World Congress on Oceans, which was in Qingdao, China. And the people at the World Congress on Oceans asked me to chair the oceanography section, which sounds like it's a really big deal, but it's basically because I could speak decent English and introduce people properly and not mispronounce their names too much. And I gave two talks. And my talk there was on the role of ocean currents in the formation of the Great Ice Ages, and the relationship of sea level rise and CO2. Two different talks, two different audiences. They both were appreciated. And I duplicated that at NYU. And the reason I mention it is that I had the information about the open Arctic while I was there. And the entire north coast of Siberia was still open water in the middle of October. Which is really, in fact, it was that way until the second week of November. It finally closed, by the way. It's now frozen.
Late winter for Siberia.
Well, no, it was an early winter for Siberia because the open water allowed snow to come off that Arctic Ocean in huge amounts. So I had a slide for the people of Shanghai. China had the lowest October temperatures on record in northern China, because of that early snow. And then they said most parts of northern China will experience a rapid drop in temperatures with snow according to the Chinese Meteorological Authority. And you know, they were basically just looking at what was going on. That early cold in Siberia, again, you have this west-to-east movement of the polar high. It undulates around, but it goes around. So we had a blob of that cold air entering the Pacific Northwest about a week ago. We had a fairly decent-sized snowstorm come through Denver and blanketing the Midwest with snow. And again, once you put the snow on the ground, sunlight hits that, bounces off, right, and it gets even colder. We experienced this rush of cold that we've had this weekend here in New York. We get snow in Maine, by the way, where I live. So
we had a couple flurries yesterday.
Yeah, but this is a little bit early.
They melted before they hit the ground, but we had them.
Yeah, well, it didn't melt in Maine. Then they coated my deck, and then by the afternoon it melted. Anyway, this is earlier cold than it should be, and it's all because that Arctic was open. Greenland, this fall, is experiencing record snow buildup, even as Greenland loses snow and ice at the edges. The interior is gaining snow because the Arctic Ocean to the east of Greenland has had record warmth. And that record warmth translates into those polar easterlies bringing open water snow onto Greenland more than in the last 5 years. So the center of Greenland is gaining snow right now. Probably contributing about maybe a tenth of a millimeter to sea level drop. Now, the sea level is still rising because the sun is heating the oceans and you have thermal expansion. But some of that is being taken away. And Antarctica has the opposite effect. Their ice donut around Antarctica is shrinking, which means that the so-called ocean effect, lake effect snow can actually reach the interior. And Antarctica is also gaining snow. At the same time, Greenland is gaining snow, so is Antarctica.
But don't Western and Eastern Antarctica act very differently
climate-wise? Not for snow acquisition. Snow falls
equally.
There was
a lot of years where Western Antarctica was losing snow and Eastern was gaining it.
Western Antarctica was losing ice because the ice shells near the ends of the glaciers were breaking off. So they were losing volume, but they were still gaining snow. In fact, I've got pictures of the Pine Island Glacier picking up 6 feet of snow in one season. Even as a glacier, because of the extra snow, puts more pressure on it and pushes it forward. And actually, I showed those slides to the NYU audience in Shanghai because the professor who was taking those pictures in Antarctica was an NYU professor. So I thought that was nice to bring some of the NYU research on climate to the audience in Shanghai.
And you are listening to Ecologic here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale, and my guest is Tom Weissmuller, and we're in the middle of our annual winter weather predictions.
Yeah, now I should get to the prediction for New York. What is going to be the result of this transition from El Nino to La Nina? La Nina is now settling in, which means the jet stream is going to flatten out. It's still going to undulate, but not nearly as bad as before. And since the polar high is larger, that Arctic front is going to move a little further south. There were a few years ago, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, it was so large it moved south of New York. Washington, D.C. got all these snowstorms and we got nothing.
I remember that.
This year, it's going to be a lot closer to New York City. The kind of snowstorms we would end up getting are called Alberta Clippers because the low-pressure cells originate in the northwest and then come down, swoop down, and put a fair amount of snow in New York, but not a lot. We get the most snow when lows form off of Texas and move across the south and then barrel
when
up the east coast.
Low pressure
systems. And then go up the east coast. And again, ocean effect, they drag in cold air off the ocean and it falls as snow in New York. Then you get the big 20 inches, 30 inches of snow, which are a rare in New York, but when they come there, they cripple the city. We had one of the last, it was January, toward the end of January, like 27 inches of snow or something like that. I don't think we're going to see a lot of those, but I think we're going to see a fair amount of clippers. And the clippers will leave 6 to 8 to 12 inches of snow in succession, maybe 2 or 3 weeks apart. You'll get a few warm incursions, but not anything as severe as last year. Why? Because the jet stream isn't undulating anymore. It's flattening out a little bit. The undulations are slight.
Flat jet stream means the temperatures don't have these big swings that they do.
That's right. Exactly.
Has a big undulation.
Exactly.
But the undulation means sometimes you have weather coming from the south, and sometimes you have it coming from the north.
Right. So we're not going to see too many 70-degree days in January and February. And we had a couple last year. You're going to see maybe 40s and 50s in the warm days. But on balance, I think we're going to get more snow, more moisture, but not crushing snowstorms. We may get one big snowstorm, mm-hmm. but the pattern now is lending itself to these Alberta Clippers. But it is going to be cold enough, so that it probably will get more snow. So sorry, listeners, don't put away your snow shovels yet.
And don't blame the messenger for the message either.
Yeah,
well people tend to do with weather forecasting.
Oh no! Listen, I get snowballs thrown at me all the time. You know? So it's a good forecast if you like winter, because winter can be very, very pretty when you have snow mm-hmm. and against the trees in the city. It's actually very attractive. Up in Maine where I live, it's so quiet you can actually hear it snow, and it's nice. Except when the snowplow leaves a 6-foot wall in front of your house and you have to punch through to get your car out. and the snowplows are very effective up there. So
yeah, I've noticed that this year, for the first time that I can remember, a lot of different places are predicting the winter weather. And I noticed that, you know, like CNN and newspapers, and they wouldn't touch it.
They're catching up to you, Ken. That's what
it could
is.
Be. WBAI is 7 years ahead of the curve. But I find it fascinating that for the last few weeks now, different places, radio, TV, newspapers, online magazines, are predicting winter weather. And they're really pushing that they're going to do that.
Yeah.
And they never, I don't know if they never had the confidence or they were just whatever. But they're doing it this year. Can you theorize why?
I think it's, the media wants attention. And if the media can get attention by giving a forecast, their ratings go up. They sell more commercial time.
That's always been true.
Right, but they really realize people are really interested in the weather. We used to have, I know in the New York area, we used to have a weatherman called Tex Antoine. And Tex forecasted weather in the 1950s and 60s. And he had a following, a real following, so much so that the other stations just ignored it because everybody was listening to Tex anyway. And now he's long gone. You got me on your station, and I don't keep my mouth shut. I tell people what the weather is wherever I am. But there are a lot of people, and it's not just a local phenomenon. There's a British meteorologist, Benny Pizer. He's on my wavelength. He recognizes the open Arctic and what it does. He's forecasting record cold for England and Northern Europe. Stockholm already had its first blizzard, and about a month or so earlier than they should have. And they had about something like 9 inches of snow, but very, very high winds. Mm. And again, it's that polar high coming down, and this wind's coming off the east. When I flew to China, it was really neat because the plane flew far into northern Canada, past Alaska, almost the pole. Why? Because they wanted to catch those polar easterlies and give them a boost on the way to the Chinese coast. And then we punched through Siberia. And in both cases, you could feel when we were going through that polar front, the air got very rough and bumpy. Mm-hmm. On the way back, the return flight never even went near Alaska on the south side because they wanted to stay in the prevailing westerlies. They didn't want those easterlies creating headwinds. And it was neat because on the way back, we had a 13-hour flight instead of 15 hours. It made a big difference. But the weather in China, I was there while a cold front swept through Qingdao, And it got decidedly cold. Also swept out the smoggy pollution, by the way. Mm-hmm. And that is a function. And interestingly enough, at the World Ocean Congress, one of the sessions that I was in had an Israeli meteorologist discuss the effect of aerosols on tropical storms and hurricanes. And his thesis was that the aerosols actually diminish the strength of hurricanes because they... this pollution that will come off the Chinese coast actually provides nuclei for water vapor to latch onto. So clouds form earlier, rise, and sap the strength, the central strength of the storms themselves. That's his thesis. And I thought it was absolutely fascinating. The neat thing is when you go to these conferences, you learn things. And I learned a lot from this guy. And I hope people learn from me, too. Particularly that my talk on the ice ages, which was what I call content dense. I covered lots of things, including the magnetic field of the Earth and how it gets affected by it. So I had a good time there, and they told me they want me to come back next year, which is pretty good, but it's expensive. This is not a cheap trip. But it enabled me to get a better handle on the winter forecast, because I actually saw the open water off the coast of Siberia. And then when I looked at the data on the sea ice reference page on the What's Up With That site, it was very obvious how we've never had an October and November with as little floating ice as this year. It's actually stunning. I was blown away when I saw it.
Well, I mean, I'm amazed to hear you talk about how blown away you are by how little sea ice, because this happens all the time. We have less sea ice than we ever had. You've said that several times.
That's right. That's right.
And you've been doing this only 7 years, and you've said that several times.
Well, the curve is heading down. In other words, if you go back, the earlier ice, we end up with, in September, maybe 6 million square kilometers of floating ice. A couple of years ago, we had 3.5, which is almost nothing. Almost nothing. And, of course, by the way, by December, it totally freezes. The Arctic is frozen solid. No moisture is available for storms. So the second half of the winter is dry as anything in Siberia. They don't get snow anymore. But the first half does.
So the more snow you get in the beginning of the winter means the less you're going to get in the end of the winter.
Yes, yes. And it gets colder earlier.
That's going to be the case every year.
Yes. And by the way, 2 winters ago, we had snow in Egypt. I've got pictures of camels sitting in snow. They had about 1 foot of snow in Jerusalem.
Oh, my goodness.
And when you had that snow, it just, that albedo effect happens, and it gets colder. CO2 and methane redirect radiation, long-wave radiation. Short-wave, bright sunlight just bounces right off and it doesn't even see it.
Which is what the greenhouse effect is.
Yes, the greenhouse effect is that long-wave. So if you have sunlight hitting open ground, when it hits the ground, it converts to infrared, long-wave, and then some of it gets bounced down by CO2, some of it gets sent back up, but there's this bouncing effect which keeps the Earth warmer. It's very important. If we didn't have it, this planet wouldn't be habitable. Mm-hmm. So the greenhouse effect is a good effect. CO2 also helps plants grow. The satellite pictures that NASA is showing of the Sahel in the Sahara show a 17% additional greening in the northern part of Africa that's encroaches into the Sahara. And it's mainly because the enhanced CO2 allows plants to utilize water more efficiently. The stoma in the leaves close up when they have sufficient CO2, and the plant does better. There's people starving down there. Those extra plants are going to be very helpful.
Well, I remember reading an article in Science News magazine years ago, and the author was writing that the increase in productivity in agriculture was due to the increase in CO2 levels in the atmosphere.
Some of it.
And, he was saying that the people who make, you know, new strains of crops and things were claiming, you know, they were taking all the credit. And he felt that more credit should be given to the extra CO2. And then the second half of his article, he talked about how that the absorption of CO2 by plants worldwide was leveling off, that there comes a point where they can't absorb any more CO2. And so adding more CO2 is not going to make them grow. And so the CO2, he theorized, and unfortunately he was correct, was going to accelerate quite a bit from the point of that article. It was quite a few years ago now. And certainly it has. So the Earth is not absorbing, or the plants of the Earth are not absorbing CO2 like they used to because they've reached the capacity.
Yeah, but again, but in certain areas, in the Sahel, you're getting new growth, right, where there weren't plants before.
Yeah, certain areas, it's always going to be true in certain areas, just as it was true, the saturation was reached much earlier in some places than it did at the time of the article.
Yeah, you know the Dutch pump 3,000 parts per million of CO2 in their greenhouses so they can give the plants that they export, like tulips and daffodils and things like that, a boost so that when springtime shows up in New York and people want to buy daffodils, these daffodils have already bloomed. And they take them out of the greenhouses, they stick them on airplanes, and they're here the next day, and you can buy them on Broadway. The flower export in the Netherlands has become a huge industry.
It's been used for hundreds of years.
Yes, but not the greenhouses. And the greenhouses basically give these plants a head start. And it's fascinating. When you fly into Holland in spring, you see all these greenhouses, but you also see the fields. And the fields don't have the rate of growth that they get in these greenhouses where they pump the CO2 in. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I was thinking of the movie Boom Bust Boom, where they were comparing the 2008 stock market crash to the tulip crash in Western Europe a few hundred years ago.
Well, that was a strain of virus that was turning these tulips unique colors. And they didn't know about viruses.
Well, they also got so that people would speculate in tulips.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where there'd be an auction of tulips, and the only people there were sellers. There were no buyers at all.
Well, that was a crash.
Right, and that was a crash. And they were comparing 2008 with the tulips that, you know, we never learned. You know, we do these things all the time, and we just never learn.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the stock market yesterday, had a record 19,000 high in a Dow. It doesn't go up forever, you know.
Now, I had one person when I publicized that, Tom Weissmuller is going to be on Ecologic next week, wanted to know, said that looking at your website, it looked like you're a climate denier. And I'm like, well, I know that's not true. So how in the world is somebody going to get that from your website? I looked at it and go, I didn't get that from there.
Well, let me just set the record straight, okay? The oceans are water. Water has a molecular density of about 800 times that of the atmosphere. So when the oceans warm, the planet warms. It turns out that the atmosphere over the last 15, 20 years hasn't really gained that much heat, but the planet is warming because of the oceans. And if you end up having a larger polar high, you're going to end up creating surface effects in the atmosphere that will say, gee, it's not cool, it's not warming anymore. But the oceans are still gradually warming. And until something changes that, like a La Nina will change that, because La Nina puts a deck of clouds over the Pacific. A volcano like Pinatubo, when it went off, actually dropped CO2, flattened it out for 3 years. If you look in at the CO2 graph from Mauna Loa, in 1964, 65, 66, Agung, an Indonesian volcano, actually dropped CO2. Why? Because it, being on the equator, it coated the Pacific with ash. Sunlight hits it, bounces off, so the oceans don't warm anymore. There are lots of other effects, too. Volcanoes do have an effect. It's not that, people used to say, well, volcanoes produce tons and tons of CO2, so it must be making the world warmer. It actually makes it cooler because of the effect of the particulates. And the particulates...
It's like having shade.
Well, it's not just shade. The particles serve as, again, condensation nuclei for water vapor. So you get more cloud forming where it wouldn't have formed before because of these particles. And the clouds are even more reflective than the volcanic dust. So volcanoes can actually knock CO2 down. And it did in the early 60s. Pinatubo in the 90s flattened it. But we are still putting out CO2 as in our factories, in our deforestation effects.
Deforestation effects are absolutely they're cruel. What they're doing to the people of the forest, the animals of the forest, and I mean, using slaves in order to make the climate worse. I mean, it's just crazy.
It's
I did a whole show about that a couple months ago.
Yeah, I think I told you once about my talk that I gave in Brazil in Sao Paulo to a group of foresters, and they were being very happy that the English were paying them 1 and 2% of the value of the timber that they were not cutting. And they were selling those rights to utilities in Scotland, who then would buy those rights so they could continue burning coal.
Yeah, right.
So
they can continue to pollute.
Yes. And the foresters told me this is wonderful because we designate the tracts on these maps where we don't cut the forest, but they happen to be on the sides of mountains that we can't get our bulldozers up anyway, mm-hmm. so we couldn't cut them if we wanted to.
Right.
And they basically were feeding their bottom line by designating these mountain tracts a forest that they, quote, weren't going to cut. They couldn't cut it if they wanted to.
You had mentioned a French meteorologist talking about aerosols lessening hurricanes?
Yes.
Okay.
It was an Israeli guy, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I was listening to you say that, I thought of Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything. She's got an entire chapter in there about geoengineering, people trying to fix the problems we've been doing to the atmosphere artificially. She went to some conferences about that. And I quote Winston Churchill a lot, his line, "Americans will always do the right thing, only after they exhausted every other possibility."
That's cute.
Now, he was talking about the beginning of World War II, but it's unfortunately applicable to a lot of things. And I'm reading about the earthquakes that fracking is causing and the amount of pollution and greenhouse gases and everything that's happening and all the problems with nuclear power and the cancer it's causing and the greenhouse gases it contributes. And I'm thinking, all right, have we exhausted every capability? And I read that chapter, and I'm like, no, we haven't. The geoengineering part, we haven't exhausted that yet. And now I'm wondering, with that guy, are they going to go, oh, let's spray aerosols when it's hurricane season?
Now, first of all, the Chinese are doing it anyway, and not even being asked. So that's actually a two-edged sword there, because there were times, a couple of days, I could actually chew the air.
I've heard about the Chinese air.
Was pretty bad. And then it got better. When I arrived in Shanghai, we were on the other side of this front, and the weather was beautiful and clear, and then it came through and the pollution came in. So, now, by the way, there is a positive side to these little earthquakes in Oklahoma. And the positive side is that they tend to be very, very, what you call mini quakes. And the theory is that they actually relieve tension from quakes that would have been bigger had they not had these tension-relieving little ones.
Oklahoma almost never, ever had earthquakes. They have thousands.
Hang on a second. In the 1800s, there was a quake on the Mississippi called the New Madrid quake. It was huge. It changed the course of the Mississippi, caused a lot of destruction. Again, if you have tension relief, you may never get a New Madrid quake. If you ever go down to Charleston, South Carolina, you'll see the buildings being held together with iron bars with big plates on the end so that they won't fall apart in an earthquake because they had a big one in the 1800s.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it at that. We have run out of time. The time just
well, you got the forecast anyway. So.
We did get the forecast in, yes. Cold and snow, and then dry.
Yep.
And coming up next is Out FM here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And Tom Weissmuller, your website is?
It's colderside.com. And the media page has a number of my talks. Going at the bottom of the page is the last one I did, and I think it's at the National Press Club in New York City, in Washington, D.C. And you go up there and you can see me with a couple of the Apollo astronauts and things like that. And remember, the ocean's warm, the planet warms. And yet, the Earth atmosphere doesn't have to follow.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And see you next year.
I look forward to it, Ken, always.
Green power is the way to grow. Indian Point has got to go. The nukes are raging, cracking, leaking, and what do you do with the waste? Venting radiation skyward with no color, smell, or taste. Green power is the way to grow. Indian Point has got to go. Green power is the way to grow. Indian Point has got to go. Windmills on the ocean, solar panels on the hills. Let's put our minds on conservation. We can do it if we will. Green power is the way to grow. Indian Point has got to go. Green power is the way to grow. Indian Point has got to go.
Hi, I'm Ken Gale of WBAI's Tuesday evening environmental show Ecologic. One of the cool things about being a BAI buddy is that you get to decide what WBAI is worth to you. Are we worth more than your cable TV? Or 10 bucks a month? 20, 100, a million? Just go to the WBAI.org website and sign up with your credit card. You'll barely notice it. In return, you get a WBAI tote bag to show off, free or discounted entry to special WBAI events, and other perks. Another cool thing about being a BAI buddy is less fundraising interruptions to your favorite programs. Go to WBAI.org. You can donate in the name of your favorite show, like Ecologic.
Oh, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Take it, gentlemen.
Hi, I'm David Kenny, inviting you to join me for the annual Everything Old is New Again holiday concert to benefit WBAI. It's Sunday, December 4th at 12:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Room. Again, that's Sunday, December 4th at 12:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Room for the Everything Old is New Again holiday concert to benefit WBAI. For more information, visit givetowbai.org.
He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness.
Your smartphone, your computer, your television. All of this technology is constantly undergoing change. But whether it's for better or for worse is something we need to decide. Our show, Off the Hook, is a hacker's perspective on new technology. Will the newest phone or flat screen truly be beneficial? or will it be another tool of exploitation? Join Emmanuel Goldstein and his crew on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. and hear the perspective of the editor and publisher of 2600 Magazine, a source for the latest in tech security flaws. Even if you aren't tech savvy, you deserve to know if that new device will end up helping or hindering your life. Listen to Off the Hook on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM and online at WBAI.org.